I know you.
Welcome, everybody, to an episode of the Waveframe series we're calling Film Chat. Today, we are talking about Dune 2. I am your host, Isaac, and as always is Brian, my co-host.
And forever.
Yes, always and forever. Maybe.
Or until we stop.
Yeah, I just realized, I just had this image of the two of us when we're on our respective deathbeds.
Yeah.
Doing this podcast.
I don't know what the future holds, but I know that it holds us doing this podcast.
Yes, yes.
That's the only constant.
Yeah, and it becomes our goal to be the longest running podcast.
Yeah.
And we're starting a few weeks ago.
I remember one time I was with my family, and I think my brother was shocked that we were going to see another Star Wars movie.
Okay.
And my dad goes, there's only one constant in this world. There's always more Star Wars. And it reminds us, there's always more podcasts.
Yes. Star Wars and taxes. That's amazing. He is not wrong.
Yeah.
Star Wars, there's always more Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a never-ending well.
As long as it keeps making money.
Yes.
And I feel like it just always will at this point.
Yeah, because even if I know it's hot garbage, I'm going to go watch it.
Yeah, same. Definitely. I'll be out there opening day.
Because I need to know all of the lore for when they put out something good.
Yes.
So I don't feel like I missed anything.
So I can understand.
Yeah.
Well, and for me, I go in the hopes that it won't be hot garbage.
Yeah, it's that everybody's wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's actually really good.
Well, I'll go before the reviews or before my friends have seen it.
Well, the thing that Star Wars now is almost universally, one section of Star Wars fandom won't like it.
Totally, definitely.
Because there's so many different factions.
Yes.
Depending on how old you are.
The people who hate Star Wars the most are Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is just
they
the
love
truth.
It, and they're mad about it.
Yep. Yep. They love some of it, and they hate the rest of it.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's interesting that we're talking about Star Wars because mm-hmm. a lot of people might go to the theater, watch Dune 2, Dune Part 2, and yep. they might say to themselves, wow, they really stole a lot from Star Wars.
Yeah.
But if you listen to our previous episode about the first Dune movie, which Luke and I and Vienna recorded a while ago, a few years ago. You can hear all about how we discussed how Star Wars was partially inspired by Dune, the book.
Yeah.
Because Frank Herbert's novel came out about 10 years before Star Wars was in production.
Yeah, at least the sandworm part.
You mean like the Sarlacc pit?
Yeah, very sandwormy.
Totally, yeah. Definitely.
But
and in this one, oh, by the way, just to be
spoilers
super clear, take this time right now to go either read the book or watch on HBO or Max Dune 1 and yep. Dune Part 2 in
Hulu.
Theaters. Okay, yeah, wherever yep. it is streaming right now. Mm-hmm. And get yourself up to date. If you need to read a wiki or watch a 20-minute YouTube video, do that if you don't care.
No, go watch the movie.
Yeah, I agree with
you. I don't believe
you.
In that.
I agree with you, and I don't believe in that either, but, I mean, a click's a click on our podcast.
That's right. All right, that's fine. I'll shove a couple of values.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, if you look at our analytics, which I think would be a fun episode sometime,
yeah.
we get listeners from Brazil or all over the place.
Really?
And I do not know why. That could be bots. That could, be just like, I don't know, clicking on podcasts.
No, I want to believe...
There's
a couple.
There's a couple loyal listeners who are inspired weekly.
And someday when I have enough money to travel again, they're going to hear me ordering a burrito somewhere.
Yes.
And like, I know that voice. That's what I want.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
They'll come up to you and tell you their life story and how you inspired them to podcast their own podcast.
Or this was the thing they listened to get them to fall asleep.
Yeah.
We're the Golf Channel.
Yeah. Podcast. The Golf Channel podcast. I like that because one of the podcasts I listen to talks, they sometimes have some listeners message in, which you can do, listener, right now. You can message us on Instagram and we might talk about your question on
Absolutely.
The air.
Absolutely.
But some of them are like, oh man, like I had surgery for cancer or something and your podcast got me through it. And,
oh, wow.
You know, or I was going through a really hard time in grad school. I didn't have any friends and your podcast got me through it. Yeah. But ours, you can fall asleep too. And oh, that's good enough for me. It doesn't need to save anybody's life.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just one. But
yeah, that'll be our aspiration.
Yeah. Can yeah. we? Yeah. Just one life.
Then it'll all be worth it. This whole darn podcast. That'll be good.
Which, I don't know. We both come from Christian culture.
Yep.
And there was always that line of like, if I can just lead one person to salvation, then it'll all be worth it. Like every Christian in high school said that line. And at the time, it would be like, well, dream bigger. And now I would say, nah.
That's a wonderful goal.
Yeah. Which leads us to Dune 2.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Which is the Maudib of evangelism.
Yep. Yeah. And the dangers of just tying yourself to one dark messiah. And my sister, Carmen, if you're listening to this, I hope that your pregnancy and your child birthing went well.
Whoa, wait,
yeah,
what?
She was due like 4 or 5 days ago, and it's my mom's birthday, so hopefully she has her kid today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, gotcha. So she texted me after watching Dune 2, and she asked me some fun questions.
Yeah.
I can read them out to you right now.
Did you tell her to drink a lot of blue Gatorade?
Mountain Dew Voltage.
Yeah.
That might help. That might help, because then she could talk to her child, and her child could talk to her.
Right, and help her take over a foreign planet.
Exactly, which, you know, is on her list.
Yeah. But, to be clear, this is a Dune 2 reference that we're making, if you don't know.
But we did say spoilers, so I hope that people...
So hopefully everyone listening knows about the blue goo.
Yes. So she said that she went to go see Dune 2 last night. Turns out... This is her speaking. Turns out I have too many questions to wait for Dune 3. And she said, I asked her, like, did you enjoy it? And, like, what are some questions you have? And I had not seen it at that point, so I couldn't help her out at that point. She said, I enjoyed it. It was a little deep in the weeds for us at times. It was not quite as pared down as the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And so we felt a little, like, left with a little lack of clarity, which I think is a legit... critique of this Dune 2 movie,
mm-hmm.
just because we can talk about it more later, but Denis Villeneuve came out, the director came out with a statement saying he's not a big fan of dialogue and he loves images and that sort of thing. So I think a good critique of this, even if I'm okay with less dialogue, this movie is that there's not a ton of clarity in why Paul is doing the things he's doing after he drinks the blue juice.
Yeah.
You know?
I will sort of provide the counter argument of,
mm-hmm.
I really like that they didn't do, because they easily could have spent 3 hours just doing exposition,
mm-hmm.
and just explaining the world and what's
definitely.
Going on, because it's so dense.
Yes.
I really like that about the first one. I would say you have to watch these movies twice.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
In order to really grasp it.
Uh-huh.
I was talking to my dad this morning, though.
Yes.
And recommended this movie. And he hadn't seen Dune 1. And I'm shocked how many people haven't seen Dune 1.
Like, well, it came out around COVID time.
Yeah.
And it was on HBO Max at the same time as it came out in theaters.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So maybe that is not an argument for people not seeing it.
Yeah.
But that's a fact.
Yeah. It was just a weird time.
Yeah.
But I was a little surprised how many people hadn't seen it. But my dad loved sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
1980s,
mm-hmm.
Star Wars stuff. And he said when he went to see the David Lynch 1980s Dune in theaters, they handed him a piece of paper with a whole bunch of things you needed to read in order to understand the movie.
My gosh.
Which is insane
that
they made
insane.
This movie and
yes.
knew people wouldn't get it without notes.
A pamphlet.
Pre-movie.
Yes.
Read this to understand notes. Which is insane.
That is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine... being like, oh boy, what am I in for? Like, what the heck is about to happen on screen?
Well, because they didn't think it could be made into a movie because it was just so complicated.
Yeah, and there's so many things on screen that are so imaginative and wild and gonzo. Mm-hmm. And usually those paragraphs that you have to read are on the screen in the movie, like... Once there was a world where spice rained or whatever. Yeah. And then you have to like read it. It's like Blade Runner, you know. Yeah. Or even Star Wars, but they did it in a way that was new and or recycled and fun. And I feel like the pamphlets were because they showed this movie, 1984's David Lynch's Dune, to some focus groups. And they were like, what the heck is happening? Can you please tell me what's happening?
I don't know.
So like a last ditch effort to try to make it palatable for normal audiences.
Yep.
That's insane. That's so fun. Wow. Yeah. Dude, the 1980s and every decade of cinema has so many interesting things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's... The smell-o-vision, you know, like some places.
They tried to add smells.
Yeah, some places.
I always thought that would be an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it went well.
I mean, like, I think there's still some around. Maybe they're just in, like, Universal Studios, like the theme park and that sort of thing. But
yeah,
I've heard about them. And then there's D-Box. And yeah, so it's so interesting to see which innovations have stayed and persevered. And, like, IMAX is really highly revered. Mostly because of Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and which ones have fallen to the wayside? Like, 3D is like, eh.
Yeah.
You know?
I do think that every time I see somebody walking past or through a lot of, like, dead bodies on a screen.
Yeah.
And, like, if they're not actively gagging and throwing up, I don't believe you.
Yeah. So unless they were just killed.
Right.
It's, you know, like, Kill Bill.
But it's gotta smell so bad.
Totally. Especially if they're in World War II or World War I where they're in an open field where the sun is out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, definitely. Oof.
That would be a heck of a smell to pump into an audience.
Yeah, it's like the worst
rotting
smell-o-vision experience ever.
Everybody's throwing up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the markers of a really good movie is when you feel like you can smell it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
They give you a popcorn bucket and a puke bucket.
Yes. Alternate.
Shaped like a worm.
Yep. Those were fun to see.
Yeah.
Those were real. I can't believe it. Wow.
So sad.
So she asked also who was actually good and who are we rooting for and why did some small weird things happen?
Yeah.
And she said, I'm sure if we read the book, we would know, which is true. Like, I've been really enjoying reading the book after watching these two.
Yeah.
I've read like 30 to 50 pages and it's been a delightful experience. But I think it's because I've seen both of the movies.
Yeah. I don't know that that's the case though, because something I heard, and people can fact check me on this, but I heard David Lynch, or not David Lynch, who's the author of the book?
Frank Herbert.
Frank Herbert.
Mm-hmm.
I heard Frank Herbert wrote Dune Messiah, the second book.
Yeah.
Because people were getting to the end of the first book and still saw Paul Atreides as the hero, not as an anti-hero.
Totally. And Denis Villeneuve said he changed Chani's character, Zendaya's character, because he wanted to be more in line with what Frank Herbert had originally intended. So you are totally correct in that. And that's what I actually, like, the clip I sent Carmen over Instagram was Denis Villeneuve talking exactly about that.
Yeah.
And I said that, like, a good way to think about it is that Paul Atreides is more along the lines of Anakin Skywalker and not Aragorn.
Right.
You know, like, he's not a good guy by the end.
Yep.
But maybe he starts at a good place.
The second viewing was so interesting of Dune 2 because I caught more of like his arc. And he kind of flip-flops back and forth, because right at the beginning when they get to the siege, to the Fremen home, which, by the way, I wish they would have shown us way more of like Fremen life.
Yeah.
I think that's what was missing for me in this movie.
Interesting.
I hesitate to say they should have made it longer because it's a really long movie.
I actually agree with you. I think it should have been like 3 hours, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to see more people just being people and what that lifestyle was like. And I get why everything seemed to move the plot forward. And I get that.
Most everything moved the plot forward.
Yes.
There were some small little moments.
There were some good little moments.
Like the little desert mouse next to his breathing apparatus.
Yeah.
Like, they could have not had that, but that was one of my favorite moments of the movie.
Yeah.
Rewatching it.
Yeah. But I wanted more just sort of village life to sort of feel that. But right at the beginning, he's talking to his mother, and he says, "Your Bene Gesserit propaganda has worked. There are people that think I'm the Messiah, and there are people thinking I'm a false prophet." And then he says, "We need to get the non-believers to believe in me so that I can exact revenge."
Yeah.
His mother says, "Your father didn't believe in revenge."
Mm-hmm.
And then they flip, and she goes full, "We got to convert the non-believers." And he is like, "Screw the prophecy. I don't want any part of it. I don't want to be a Messiah. I don't want to lead these people because I'm afraid of what will happen." And then he drinks the blue goo and he's like, "Nope, I'm awesome. Everybody follow me.
Yep.
I know about your dreams and what you're afraid of.
Yep.
Kill them all." And so he like goes back and then just full throttle into anti-hero.
Yes.
But that was interesting. I didn't catch that the first time. But it's, I like that it's more, it's complicated.
It is complicated. And I'm wrestling, and I don't know exactly how I feel about it, but it seems that I'll get more insight into the worm poison piss.
Right.
When I'm reading the book, because that is the part that's kind of a sticking point for me, is how do I feel about the fact that a large part of the character change for Rebecca Ferguson's character, the Reverend Mother at the end, Lady Jessica. Lady Jessica and Paul Atreides, they both have their character drastically change after they drink the blue juice.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is like really powerful and dynamic in the movie. But when I think about it later, I'm like, would it have been more powerful if it wasn't a magical ceremony? And it was more of an idealistic, or like a change in ideology.
Yeah. I think the wrestling for me is similar, where the magic is real. I do believe their eyes were open to something.
Definitely.
And I think my gut is to believe that if somebody's eyes are open to something, that that is a good thing.
Mm.
But the movie seems to insinuate that their eyes being opened and the path being laid clear is actually bad.
Well, it's so, I want to say nuanced, because to be clear, I have not read Dune Messiah, which is the second book, and I have not read very far into the first book, but I like this interpretation that I heard on this YouTube series called Lessons from the Screenplay, which is a great series if you want to see people intelligently and creatively break down the screenplay and like the story structure of it all.
Yeah.
And one of the guys on the podcast said, the scene he read into was the scene where Paul has the vision where the ocean meets the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And he perhaps maybe has this vision of this paradise, this green paradise that he talks about. But it comes at the cost of him breaking his relationship with Chani.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes at the cost of, you know, him not being a quote-unquote moral character, and thousands, billions of people starving through the Holy War.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's right. Complicated.
Yeah. Well, because in the first movie, they enter the scientific place. Do you remember this scene? It's they recently, Paul and Jessica escape.
Oh, yeah. With all the representative plants.
Takes it to the plants.
Yeah.
And says, this place would have been a paradise.
Liet Kynes.
But then they discovered spice.
Yeah.
And so they decided not, because they were going to drill to the core and pull up water.
Yeah.
And turn the planet into a water-based place.
And now nothing survives except for sandworms.
Right. Because spice is so valuable.
Yeah.
Nobody
spice
wants to
and
do
worms.
It.
Yeah.
And so they... It sounds like the Bene Gesserit soda prophecy of this is what will happen, is they'll bring it into this green paradise that everybody dreamed of.
Yeah.
And he dreams of that, but and I don't know.
It's,
yeah.
It's hard, because to be clear, I think that anyone who is wondering, like, is Paul a good guy or a bad guy? By the end of the movie, he's a dark bad guy.
Which you can tell by his eyes. They like made his eyes darker.
Almost. Interesting.
I almost his face changed.
I would have to look into that and rewatch it.
At least I noticed it.
I mean, I definitely think his acting changed.
His acting changed. Yeah. Maybe it was just really good acting, but it seemed like the way they were doing his makeup on his face was subtly different. Like he almost had like dark shadows under his eyes, and they started wearing a black cloak thing, which I was like. Nice. Like looking very sick. Darth Vader.
Yes. Uh-huh. I think Frank Herbert wanted to interrogate the monomyth legend where we love Star Wars because Luke Skywalker is a surrogate for us where we're like, well, we would love to be special, just like Harry Potter or Narnia or whatever. Like, we'd love to be royalty. Mm-hmm. But... we aren't usually in real life, except maybe metaphorically or spiritually, if you'd like to do that.
Special.
Yeah, exactly.
And just me. Yeah. I'm the only one.
You might be right about that.
Yeah.
So that's why like Star Wars is so satisfying, because they defeat the evil empire and they blow up the Death Star, and that's great.
Yeah.
But in this, Frank Herbert's saying, hey, like in real life, when we prop up political figures like the Bene Gesserit do, and we take advantage of a marginalized society who really, really need somebody to believe in, often that power can corrupt people to be genocidal maniacs.
Yeah.
And that's Paul by the end.
Yeah.
But you don't fully feel that, and this was also brought up in Lessons from the Screenplay, because the Harkonnens suck so much.
Right. There's a worse enemy.
Exactly.
Yeah, that you're glad is defeated.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I like that. I like that it's not... I like that it's not simple.
No, I do too. Yes.
I like it's that they interesting. Suck more.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why this science fiction book is known as kind of the science fiction book.
Yeah.
Because even though it's dense and dry, perhaps some people believe that, as a reading experience, and you might have to read it two or three times to really get all out of it. But it was such a interesting, progressive, groundbreaking story that it's really stood the test of time.
Yeah. I don't know that I'll ever read it.
It's a good read, in my opinion.
Yeah. We've talked about this before. I'm so character motivated. That's always the interesting thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the sense that the books are very plot and world building.
I'd say there's fine. There's both. I said there's both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I didn't love Lord of the Rings for that reason. Mm-hmm. I admired it, and I read them, and they were fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, meh. I wanted to know more about the characters, and that's why I think those movies I liked much better, because they're able to build that out. And I think probably like the Dune movies better too. Because they're able to go into some depth.
It's kind of impressive that you read all the Lord of the Rings books while just thinking, like, I'm not super into this.
Oh, yeah. That's why I have to be careful when I start.
Oh, because you're going to read all 32 Dune books?
Potentially. Yeah.
Well, there's only six that Frank Herbert wrote.
Right.
So.
Okay.
You could just make it a six.
Yeah. And then his son wrote, like, 30.
Yeah. And I've heard those don't really touch those. Yeah.
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 Based on, somebody was telling me, based on 20 pages of notes that Frank Herbert left, he wrote, like, 30 books. And they're like, what were in those notes?
From my understanding, there's a huge difference between Christopher Tolkien and Brian Herbert.
Yeah.
Because Christopher Tolkien had way more notes from his father.
Yeah.
And was maybe a better organizer and writer, because he made the Silmarillion happen.
Yeah.
But you know what? Good for Brian to just go off and be creative.
Way to go, Brian.
And I have not read the book, so who am I to judge?
That's true.
I don't know Brian.
Yep.
Yep.
I haven't read them. Here I am judging.
Exactly. So other people have said they're pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, wait, what were we talking about? I'm trying to remember.
Where it all started?
Yeah, it all started. So anyway, that was really compelling for me to think about, that this is a critique of what we traditionally in America love to see in our stories.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a place for both of the stories.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be just nuanced, interesting critique.
Yeah, kind of gray.
Yeah. But I think you could at least try reading the book, or maybe give yourself a rule, like, I'm only going to read the first two. All
right.
Because there's some really fun moments that I think would have been hard for me if it was my first time reading it, mm-hmm. but or if it was my first experience with the Dune world, because the example I give to a lot of people is when they're explaining the way Paul looks, they say he has the hairline of his maternal grandfather who cannot be mentioned or named.
Cool.
And that means...
that helps.
That, for us, we know that's the Harkonnen Baron.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Vladimir Baron. And for the reader who's reading it for the first time, they're like, why the heck did you just tell me that? That's stupid.
Cool.
I don't need to know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they also say he has the, like, character and bravado of his grandfather on Duke Leto's side.
Yeah.
Who was the bullfighter.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that overall it's such an engrossing story, and there's a reason why there's hours and hours of YouTube like lore dumps and, you know, investigations of what this all means, and are the sandworms like physically, scientifically possible, and like, you know, he really thought of all this stuff.
It's great exploration.
Yes. I can send you that link.
Yeah. Did you have any other critiques of the movie? I know you said it left some people hanging on information and there wasn't enough.
I personally was like, I'm a Letterboxd user and I gave it 5 stars both times, which is the highest rating. And I've found out that a lot of my ratings are, I'm pretty much rating my experience of watching the movie.
Okay.
I'm not necessarily rating the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I'm fine with that. I'm completely comfortable with that. And so I allow myself to have critiques of a movie that I give 5 stars to.
Yeah.
Just because I'm like, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Like, I'm an adult.
Exactly. So, yeah. And I think for me, if there was an extended edition of this movie, I would be so happy. Just like Lord of the Rings.
I know. I wanted a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, it's a long movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I could have watched another half hour probably.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely could have.
Nah.
It does turn really quickly from he is adamant about not going south.
Uh-huh.
To he goes south, drinks that worm stuff, and is completely different.
Yes.
And it just feels so quick.
It really, really does. And I think that's probably the sequence that I come back to most is it really hangs on that scene where he and Chani talk about like how he needs to go south.
Yeah.
And you watched it more recently than I did. We both watched it twice in theaters. But you watched it last night. How does that conversation go again? Where he's like crying and she's not even wiping away his tears, which is cool.
Yeah, because water's super valuable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
But she pretty much convinces him to go south.
Yeah. And he knows that it'll come at a cost.
Yeah.
Because he's just had a vision where he talks to Jamis. And Jamis says, you need to see everything.
Yeah.
And he hears from the Bene Gesserit that he needs to see the past in order to know the future.
Yes. Yes.
And so I think
he needs to be at the highest point to see everything before the hunt starts.
Yes. Yeah. I think he knows if he goes south, it's going to change everything and he's going to lose her.
Mm-hmm.
And he chooses to do that anyway. And she sort of talks him into it. But then he gets there and he walks right into that temple and drinks the goo.
Yeah, it almost feels like there's a beat missing.
Yes.
Where he can kind of like take a few deep breaths before going in.
There's a conversation that's missing. Yeah. Or
conversation with who, you know?
Probably Chani again.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
But it did feel really quick. And then I think the other thing that felt like it was missing was, I said it earlier, but more glimpses of Fremen life in Isic. I still don't know I know what the warriors are doing, but I don't know what everybody else is doing in that world. And I think it would have had a greater impact when the Siege gets attacked. Like, I would have felt that scene more. Yeah. And then at the end, when they all fly off into space and Chani is the only one sort of left about to ride a sandworm, I think I would have felt the impact. Because it's almost, the culture is now compromised.
Yeah, totally.
It's been taken over by this one figure. And the original goal of them being able to maintain their culture where they lived is lost. And they're now all boarding spaceships to go fight wars on other planets.
Oh, gosh.
That's a huge loss.
Huge.
And I felt like I didn't fully feel it because I didn't get enough of what it was that they were losing.
That's a great point.
And I wanted to see more of that. And I thought that would be fascinating just to see. But that was my one. I wanted more critique.
Yeah, he kind of chose to focus more on the relationship between Chani and Paul than the relationship between the people and their future.
Yeah.
Even though he addressed both of them. And it was interesting. I heard somebody say that there's a theory that Chani slapped Paul after she gave him his blue tear of life to bring him back to life.
The tear from the desert spring.
Yes, exactly.
Which is her name. Yes. Which I didn't catch that the first time around. That was
a cool moment.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because that was her name she didn't like from the south.
From the prophecy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she slaps him and walks out. And some people think it's because Paul is so enveloped in the Bene Gesserit powers, he might have been faking his or inducing his no vital signs death so that the prophecy could be fully fulfilled. That's even though he could have brought himself like back to life himself, perhaps.
That is an interesting take.
And if she caught on to that, and if that is true, which I'm not saying it is for sure, then that'd be a good reason for her to be freaking pissed.
Yeah. I think the simpler take would be, well, yeah, she's mad about a number of things.
Yeah.
She did something that could have killed him.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like she's more angry about what this means for
their
culture and people.
Yeah, and their relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty much over at that point.
And speaking of that, I think one of my favorite things about this movie is the mournful music that plays often when they're together.
Mm.
And it's beautiful and heartbreaking. And like, maybe I'll put a little bit in here to say exactly what I'm talking about. But it has the less raw power than the motif in the first movie and more of this like soulful mourning.
Yeah.
And I really liked that.
I don't know that I caught that.
I'll send it to you.
I'll have to watch it again.
Yeah. And honestly, I probably will.
Yeah.
And I think the best way to watch this is in IMAX. So if you watch it again,
you should catch it in IMAX. I'm excited to watch it again. This is the first time in a while where I saw a movie in theaters and thought, this would be a disappointment to just watch on my TV.
Oh, interesting.
I don't think it'll feel the same at all.
I don't think it'll feel the same, but I still think that it would be worth it if somebody's listening to this like years from now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Like, still watch it. There's enough in there.
Yeah.
But I would lament for the person that didn't experience this in theaters.
I lament for myself because I missed the first one in IMAX.
Yeah, it's just built for it.
Yeah.
It's built for, large experience to pull you into.
I've seen it in IMAX and non-IMAX, and it's still really powerful in a regular theater.
Yeah.
The music and the sound.
I only
see
it in a regular theater, and it was very, very good.
Yes. Yeah. And let's talk about one of the best moments in the whole movie in the theater-going experience for me was Paul riding the sandworm for the first time.
Yeah.
That was so awesome.
Yeah.
And the little moment where he thinks he's right on, like, in line with it, but then he has to run like 40 feet over, yeah. you know, like really yeah. helped me oh, get crap, in the, oh, crap, yeah, crap. Exactly.
yeah.
And he has to like slide down and he's just flailing yeah. around. And I loved that feeling of like, I know he's going to survive, but when I'm watching it, I'm like, yeah, is he going to yeah, make it? Yeah. Is he going to do it?
Yeah. Which I think brings up the one thing I wanted to talk about that we haven't touched on yet, which is Stilgar's little moments of comedic relief.
He's amazing.
He's so good.
He's so genuine.
Yeah. yeah. Well, because when the worm starts coming, he's not that big.
Yeah, exactly. <It's> like, ah. Which yeah. helps like us. It's humorous, but it also helps us understand how big this grandfather worm is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his just his blind belief.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's so good.
He's so humble. Awkward. This proves that he is the
yeah.
Muad'Dib, you know, yeah. because he's so humble.
Saying he's not just tells us he is even more.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's, yeah, he's just so earnest mm-hmm. about the whole thing, and it's really adorable.
There was one moment in the movie that I was, like, even looking for the second time, where they're kind of debriefing, all just, like, laughing, eating on those, like, sticks or whatever
yeah.
in the tent. And Stilgar says that Timothy Chalamet, Paul, he could predict what was going to happen
mm-hmm.
during the spice sandcrawler scene.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, when did Paul predict something in the fight?
Yeah.
Do you know?
He said it was when
he could foresee, and he like does that hand motion.
Yeah. It was when he saves Chani from the bullets from the helicopter, I think.
Okay.
So did you see the way he jumped on her to save her from the bullets?
Yeah.
I think is the line right uh-huh. before that.
Yeah, I think
you're probably right. And I was like, I think he's reading into that.
I definitely thought he was reading into it, but I didn't know if it was an editing thing where they kept it in, but they took out more of the overt part where he like
where
predicted
he
could
kind of foresee things.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, he definitely like protected her and saw that people were going to attack her. And
mm-hmm.
it was interesting that he chose not to throw a knife at the Harkonnen. Maybe the armor's too thick, but he yeah. couldn't catch up to the second Harkonnen, and she just shot him, which was one of the best moments
that
in the
was
movie.
Awesome.
That yeah, was amazing.
I remember thinking in my head, please shoot him with that thing.
Yes,
please shoot
yes, him with that yes. thing. Yes. it was amazing.
Yeah, it was so good.
And the Harkonnens are so fun to hate.
Yes.
Like, whenever they die, you're like, that was awesome. Yeah. They suck so bad.
Yep. Yeah. You... pasty white bald
exactly
unibrow with no hair
yes yes
yeah
and I mean we could just go through the list but I feel like Austin Butler did one of the
so good.
Best jobs in the whole movie
yeah
like yeah. I saw this little Instagram clip where Timothée Chalamet said he felt like he was playing the bass line where Austin Butler's character Fade Rotha was playing the like riff
yeah.
the crazy guitar riff
yeah
which I thought was really fun.
So good.
He does get to shine in this movie for sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
After you.
Another maybe little critique that I'm mulling over is that the ending felt maybe just a hair anticlimactic, even
yeah.
though his fight against Fade Rotha was super intense, and I
yeah.
loved that, and it was one of my favorite moments when you found out, like, because I didn't know who was going to win. I genuinely thought maybe
yeah.
Fade Rotha was going to win.
Yeah.
And so when you found out that Paul stabbed him, you know, off screen or like underneath him, it makes it even more impactful because I'm pretty sure that Gurney Halleck taught him that move.
Yeah.
Because in the first movie and in the book, that Paul does what Fade Rotha does. But then at the end of Dune 2, Paul does what Gurney Halleck did,
yeah.
where he's like, you sacrificed your you
yeah.
know, positioning, and I have you here.
I think the Emperor was a little too easy to beat.
That's,
I felt like he should
yeah.
have had another card up his sleeve.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted him to be a little more sinister and conniving.
Yeah.
Where there was, like, one more Uno reverse card that
yeah.
Paul Atreides gets back with, you know? Like,
yeah.
I wanted, yeah.
That would have been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard because... You know, I loved the moment where Paul stamps his foot.
Yeah.
That's, like, powerful.
Uh-huh. They made that extra loud.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And Christopher Walken, the Emperor, barely kissing his ring was
mm-hmm.
cool. But You're right. It just felt just a little bit like, whoa, okay, everybody's in the same room. Everybody's going to watch this thing happen. It felt almost like tribal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
It felt like Black Panther. You know, it reminded me a little bit of everybody's going to respect the rules and they're going to let the two, like, guys fight over it.
Yeah. And you know? It's like, why would they let this happen?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And the Sato Kar and Baron Harkonnen, they all kind of felt a little bit deflated in their menace and their...
Yeah.
Power in this movie.
Yeah.
Except for Fade Rotha.
Yeah. They got beat pretty good and quick.
Yeah, exactly. Just
a couple
yeah.
sandworms and a couple nukes.
Which I mean, those are powerful things.
Yeah. And especially if you don't know they exist.
Yeah, the family like atomics.
They believe the South was uninhabited.
Which is crazy.
Right. There's millions of them.
Yes.
And even the Baron says, he goes, the South isn't inhabitable.
Yeah.
And so, of course, they were a little surprised.
Definitely.
By the magnitude of the Fremen force.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of people just underestimated the Fremens in general. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Fremen didn't use the sandworms very often against the Harkonnen. So then maybe they were caught off guard for that aspect of it. But I think the big, big factor was the atomic bomb, probably.
Yeah. Yep. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal. Yeah, that certainly helps a lot.
But the other thing I couldn't stop laughing at the second go around is every time Baron Harkonnen is in a tub. That dude loves tubbing.
Yes, he does.
He's in a tub most of the movie. And it's fantastic.
Wait, in your headcanon, what does the tub provide him?
I don't know. I thought it was a healing tub.
I thought it was a healing tub too.
The first time you see it in the first movie.
Yes.
But then he's just lounging.
Yes.
Other times.
I love it because when he wants a conversation to be done, he just goes underwater.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have power to just be like, I'm done.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
I don't need to breathe.
Yes. Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And when Fade Rotha comes back in, he's just like smoking his pipe. And the look on his face is hilarious.
I mean, he has a big old.
Yeah. He's like, I just made your birthday amazing.
Yeah.
And you're going to be mad. But really, I'm going to make you emperor, bro.
Even their fireworks look like bubbles from the tub.
Tub bubbles.
Tub bubble fireworks.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Baron Harkonnen, you get to control all of the aesthetics of your whole kingdom.
Yeah.
Everything's black and white, which was amazing. That was so awesome.
Yeah.
And thank you for sending me that Instagram clip. I had not seen that before.
Yeah.
Where they used that special camera to make everything...
Infrared.
Inverse. Yeah, infrared. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could, watching it with that knowledge made it so much cooler.
So much cooler. And I loved those weirdo guys who had the big... hammerhead horns.
Yeah.
And they're just stalking around them.
If you don't know what we're talking about, the gladiator fight.
Yes.
With, who was it?
Fade Rotha. And three Atreides guys.
Who
were yoked.
Was shot in black and white and infrared.
Yeah.
And just took a Herculean effort from everybody involved, but turned out very cool.
And somebody pointed it out to me. Somehow I missed it on my first viewing, but... it's an amazing transition where the black clothing, when they come into the quote unquote sun, turns white.
Yeah.
And it's just like an amazing, seamless. It's so good. It almost feels like easy. I don't know. It almost feels like, how did they do this?
Yeah.
It must be easy, but.
But they probably just spent days,
hours
working on these tiny little details.
Yes.
Sweet.
Yeah. So overall, just. I'm just happy that I get to exist and see something like this.
Yeah.
And that it's making enough money where we're probably going to get Dune Messiah.
Yeah.
Which is...
I really hope so.
Crazy cool.
That would be awesome.
Denis Villeneuve says that he's probably going to take a break, which he deserves a break. But I do think it'll be hard to wait for Dune 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But...
And I think Greg Fraser is the... cinematographer, and wow, they just all knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. I also feel like there's enough in this movie that I can watch it a few more times.
Yes.
In anticipation.
Yes.
Dune.
I agree. Yeah.
Which would be cool.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody else in the crew that I'd want to shout out.
Oh, man.
Thank you to Frank Herbert for writing this book a long time ago, and starting this journey. It's a good reminder that you can write something just for yourself and other people will probably enjoy it. Yeah. It might not be the people you expect, but...
Yeah.
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 Okay, so also this guy named Roger Ewan, he was the stunt coordinator. I think all of the fight scenes and everything were just spectacular. Oh, yeah. Just spectacular.
Yeah. After seeing so many movies with fight scenes, it was strange to see fight choreography that felt new and interesting.
Like when Paul does that like spin move off of Vedratha, it was like, whoa!
Look at that. Amazing. Look at him go.
Yeah.
Little kangaroo mouse.
Yes. So yeah, Greg Fraser was the cinematographer and Joe Walker was the editor. And then there's Dixie Chassay, who did the casting. So, I mean, everybody just came together, did A-plus effort, A-plus results.
Yeah.
And you should go out and see this again, because you've probably already seen it.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah.
One can hope.
But yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And do I want to, like, live in the world? Probably not. But do I want to escape to this world to escape my life currently? Yes, I do. I fall asleep reading this book.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
It's amazing. I love that. So, oh, and we've forgotten to say what we're grateful for a few recordings.
That's true. Let's
quick.
We're going to end with it.
Say that, yeah.
Do you have one?
Boy. I'm thankful that it's spring break. And the campus has slowed down a little bit.
Yeah.
Parking is free and available. All the students are gone, so you can park anywhere.
I've been parking on the street.
Yeah, and it just feels nice to have a different change of pace, so I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I am going to go a similar route. Thankful to get to do a little traveling here.
Yeah.
Break up the routine and do something new. And it's... funny how when I have a routine, I want to do new things. And when I've been doing new things, I just want routine. But right now, I want to do new things and happy for that.
The push and pull of life.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's always greener.
Yeah. Well, thank you to you guys for listening. And if you want to check us out on Instagram, at WaveframePod, I'm at ip.deboer. Check out my letterbox, which is also ip.deboer.
Do it.
And thanks for listening.
Bye.
See you next week.